is knowing. Crow!
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is episode 580. Jason Lindgren is with me, and Dr. Diana Drake joins us for the first time. She is going to offer all members of Crow 777 Radio a 15% discount. And as she does her introduction, we'll give you all an idea of what some of those things are. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a beautiful Louisiana day.
It is raining on us still. I will be lucky if I get a handful of telescope days before we get to June. But with that, welcome, Dr. Drake.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here today.
Can you give us a quick intro and also cover the types of things that you're offering the 15% discount to our members?
Yes, absolutely. So I actually began my journey as a licensed esthetician, and I am now a board certified traditional naturopath with a PhD in natural medicine. I own a virtual practice where I see people specializing in hormones, thyroid, and skin issues, and that is dmdnaturalmedicine.com. And I also own another brand. It's called Dr. Dale Wellness, and that website is drdalewellness.com. And that is where anyone can enjoy the 15% off if they click through the Crow website. And we wholesale and retail to practitioners and end users. We specialize in homeopathic remedies, herbal remedies, and our line is really known for our hormone rejuvenation systems. Right now, everything has, you can get individual remedies. We have things built into kits, and we have a lot of great things on offer that I will kind of go through today as we have time.
Okay, we're going to jump in here in a second, but I just want to mention, I don't know, some years ago, 10 years ago, I had kind of a dim view of supplements because of vitamins and what I was used to at the time. Fast forward to now, there's not a day go by that I don't take supplements. I had terrible arthritis that vanished the very same day that I discovered that B12 and niacin were apparently lacking in my system. I had trigger finger, which was fixed with magnesium from Clive. What I'm here to say is that it seems to me that most of us are individually needing what we need, and it's up to each of us to determine what that is and then to go out and do it. And what I know now is that nutrition is damn near the entire game, and supplements can really be life-changing if you take the time to discover what you're short on and what you need, and then you take the time to get quality supplements. But Dr. Drake, let's jump in with the causes of hormonal dysfunction and basically stress and toxicity.
Okay, absolutely. And I did just want to cover real quick, you guys, who Dr. Dale was. So she actually was my mentor when I became a naturopath. She really taught me how to understand the hormone and thyroid space. And she just offered a lot of great medicines in that realm. And so when she actually sadly passed away a couple years ago, I was able to take over the company. So I just wanted everyone to know why the name of the company is different than my name. And we can jump back up and talk about all the different things we offer. And let's just go ahead and jump into our first point. You guys have definitely touched on this a lot in the show, but I just wanted to do a focus on why HRT, known as hormone replacement therapy, is so dangerous, and that people do have other options using homeopathy. As far as causes of hormone dysfunction, we're looking at two things. It's stress and toxicity. You guys know we've gone over what creates toxicity in the system: metals, drugs, pesticides, Roundup, fluoride, microplastics, even caffeine is an endocrine disruptor. We also, of course, have radiation and then hormones and toxins in our food and water supply. And I know a lot of people have probably heard the term endocrine disruptor, and I kind of want to just give people a visual of what that looks like. So if you could picture ourselves as beach balls, and you know that little plastic part that we blow it up and kind of tuck it back in, I want you to imagine that that is a receptor site and that it is all over the beach ball, just like ourselves. So certain receptor sites will open for certain keys. So an endocrine disruptor is something that looks like a hormone to the body. So it plugs into that receptor site, but then it's just kind of stuck there, not doing anything and taking the place of where a hormone or something else should be active. So when we have all of these toxins in our cells and junking up all these receptor sites, nothing is going to be working properly. Then when we look at the stress piece, people talk a lot about being stuck in fight or flight. And I kind of want to just paint a picture of what this really looks like, because I know we hear it and I just feel like sometimes people don't really put together why this is so important. But when we see a bear, our muscles are going to tense up. How many people do you know suffer from pain and muscle tension? Our blood pressure is going to go up. How many people do we know suffer from chronic hypertension, which is high blood pressure? We have anxiety and panic is going to set in. This can lead to long-term, you know, having anxiety and panic attacks literally over nothing. We secrete cortisol and adrenaline. This creates overactivity. We can't relax. This is going to burn out the adrenals. Obviously, you're not going to be able to sleep when you've seen a bear. But long term, if you're stuck in fight or flight, you're going to have a lot of these issues. And one of the biggest ones that people don't realize is when we go into fight or flight, we're actually mobilizing our blood sugars so that we have the energy to escape this bear. And long term, if you are stuck in fight or flight, this we're looking at insulin resistance and diabetes. So stress really is a big problem. And when we look at using bioidentical hormones for the body, I just kind of wanted to teach you guys why this is not a good idea. So first of all, there is no such thing as a bioidentical hormone. All USP hormones are synthesized from soy and yam. These hormones have the potential to create toxicity in the body, especially the liver. They also have a potential to drive cancer. This is why you cannot take them if you've had certain cancers. There's a ceiling of use of about 15 years. So they tell you it's only safe to take for 15 years, yet they are recommending these things to people in their 30s. I've seen women come to me that are 25 that are being told that they need to get on testosterone. This also atrophies our native production, which is already the problem, right? So when you put something in the body that we're supposed to be creating on our own, our body's just going to get the signal, oh, it's already in the bloodstream. We don't have to make any more at all. And it's really just making a bad problem worse. Another big issue is that Western medicine is constantly testing using the blood, which does not give us true bioavailability, meaning the levels are likely actually much higher in the body. So you could be taking too much of HRT and not really knowing about it. Thyroid drugs, this is also a problem because you are, again, replacing a hormone that the body is supposed to be making itself. Melatonin, this is also technically a form of HRT. We are supposed to be making this ourselves, not taking it. So if you are a male under the age of 40 and you are being told that you have low testosterone, this is a big red flag about something going on in your health. Women too, if you guys are being told you don't make enough progesterone, you're estrogen dominant, whatever it is, the answer truly is not just to turn to HRT because this is going to get you stuck in a really bad loop for your health. Obviously, postmenopausal women, it is normal that we're going to stop making as many native hormones, but we can actually shift production to the adrenals, even if you've had a full hysterectomy. So it's not supposed to be this really negative experience when the body is going into menopause. Unfortunately, our adrenals are so stressed out and we are so toxic that this transition is really negative for women. But I just kind of want everyone to understand that when you take HRT, this does not address stress. It does not change your diet. It does not block radiation exposure or get rid of any excess hormones in the system. All it does is, yes, it will fix your levels on labs, but it leaves that root cause going unchecked in the body for potentially years and years and years. And this is the whole problem with any drug with Western medicine. I'm just really seeing this HRT thing especially be a problem right now. Same thing with the thyroid. If you are iodine deficient and you have toxins in your thyroid, just taking a thyroid stimulating hormone is not going to fix the problem that's actually going on in your thyroid. So today I actually want to give everyone some protocols of how to deal with these things naturally and clean up a lot of this stuff with homeopathy. But just like with anything else, homeopathy is not a magic bullet. You still have to do the work to detox, to clean up your diet, make sure you're getting good hydration, all the things that you guys have been talking about on here for years. But there are some really amazing targeted things that the Dr. Dale line makes that goes after specific hormone balancing. And then touching back on dealing with the thyroid, huge problem right now is that we have so much buildup of glyphosate and bromine in our thyroids. So we have those chemicals basically plugging into the thyroid instead of the iodine that's supposed to be there. This is what's actually causing the elevated TPO or the Hashimoto's, right? So they're telling us, oh, you have autoimmune in the thyroid. Your body is attacking the tissue, thyroid tissue, for no reason. Well, it's not for no reason. Your body is trying to get all this crap out of your thyroid, and you are not making it any better by taking thyroid drugs.
So is it actually true? Like, what's the one you take for sleep? Is it melatonin or serotonin?
It's melatonin.
So I was told that, and it works because I took it at one point, and you do easily go to sleep. But I was told that if you take something like melatonin, your body quits producing it at the level that it should, which must mean that you were already depleted in the first place if you were taking it. Is that true? And is that also true of things like hormones?
That's 100% true. And that's exactly the point I'm making here, Crow. You nailed it on the head. We're just putting in the body things that we're supposed to be making ourselves. Now, the relief that comes from taking melatonin, which only works on about 50% of people because other people's sleep root causes are may not be from lack of melatonin. But the result is like, oh, well, I'm sleeping better, or oh, I'm taking hormones and now I feel better. So it gives us that false sense of like, oh, I found what's wrong with me. But what you're doing is atrophying your body's ability to make the melatonin in the first place. But what's really cool is with homeopathy, we can give the body the blueprint of how to remake melatonin on its own. So it's going to take longer and it's a little bit more working, you know, it's more of a process to get there, but we can get those native levels back up using homeopathy instead of just giving the melatonin because it is damaging. And I've seen, and I show people every day, when I take their hormone tests and their melatonin is supposed to be like at 25 and it's at 500, I'm like, look at what you've been doing to your body. People don't even realize they're taking so much that it's way, way, way too much for the body.
And what happens if the body starts just not producing what it's supposed to produce from you doing that? Does the body recover ever, or is that a permanent thing you've done now, like permanent damage?
It depends. So with melatonin, if you wean off of it slowly, I think with time, you might be able to replenish it. However, if you don't deal with the root cause of why it went down in the first place, it's probably not going to get any better than it was initially when you started taking it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, let me use a real life example that affects a lot of people. As everybody knows, a major portion of our country is addicted to pain medicine of one kind, usually opiate or opiate derivatives. When people finally decide, and I know this from direct experience over so many years, I can't even count. People say, I'm going to clean up, I'm going to get off this. And one of the hardest things is they can't sleep anymore because they've been taking opiates. Mm-hmm. I felt when I did this years ago, because the VA had me on opiates at one point for an extended period of time. And that's how I actually had ended up taking the melatonin. But I felt like taking the opiates had somehow messed with my melatonin production. So how does someone in a situation like that, which is so common now, trying to get cleaned up off prescribed opiates, and how do we get them back so they can sleep? Because that is one of the biggest problems that make people fail at trying to get off the drug is because they can't sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. A lot of different things we can do for this. The Dr. Dale line, we make a great tincture. It's called Neuro Balance Pro, and that's really going to kick up the pineal gland and just kind of get that native production going, as well as other neurotransmitters. You also need to heal the gut. And just some great supplements would be SAMe, GABA. What's the other one that I love to, amino acids. That would be a kind of a nice protocol to get sleep going naturally. And then at night, I would take Nervine herbs, lemon balm, valerian, things that just really help relax the body. But you can get a lot of native production back by bringing in the NeuroBalance Pro tincture. Also, I know with addicts, they often, you know, kind of come off those other things, but like they're smoking and using caffeine. Those are all stimulants that you really need out of the body if you want the body's nervous system to be able to actually relax. So I really, number one, you can't be on caffeine if you're using homeopathy because it won't work. It's the frequency of caffeine. I mean, caffeine is a defense chemical of the plant. So it's just, it's a toxin in itself. I mean, it's a pesticide that the plant makes, so it won't be eaten by bugs, but it just will not work with caffeine in the body at all. It's just, it's too stimulating. It wrecks the adrenals. So people on that have been in any sort of addictive situation really need to get off any sort of stimulant. And then bringing in the homeopathy and the other herbs, I think that would be a good slam dunk protocol for that.
What do you think? I mean, if someone is trying to get off and they haven't been able to sleep, how much time do you feel like is going to, you know, go by before they can start to get at least moderate rest?
You know what else I was just thinking? CBD would be really good to bring in as well at night. And I would say the problem is some of these things can take like 30 to 90 days to work. But I feel like if you hit it hard with making sure you're off caffeine, no cigarettes, no stimulants, you're taking amino acids, valerian, lemon balm at night, SAMe, GABA, taking the Neural Balance Pro, and then the CBD, I really feel like you could probably start to feel better in a week. But again, don't quote me on that, guys. Everyone is a bio individual. It's also going to depend on toxicity, gut health, all kinds of other things. But that would be like throwing everything I have at it.
Do you have anything else, Jason?
Hormones with the whole transitional thing, especially in younger people. Just how much damage is going on there?
I was going to bring that up because the moment we started talking about hormones, I feel like the mainstream doesn't even have a level view or a realistic view of hormones because it's so wrapped up in the gender agenda,
right?
Which is almost wholly designed to create a civilization that has less children. That's my point of view. But anyhow, go ahead, doctor. That's a good question, Jason.
Yeah. So with the transgender community, homeopathy works with the body to increase native hormone production. If you are born a female, the homeopathy isn't going to magically give you more of the male hormones. Does that make sense? So if you are not dealing with your original hormone composition for being originally male or female, homeopathy is not going to be a good hormone option for you. Your only option is HRT because that is the only thing that can force the body into doing something that it is not natively designed to do.
Is there a price to be paid for doing that?
I think absolutely. I think creating toxicity in the liver. I don't know how they're going to get around the 15-year ceiling that Western medicine has been saying is kind of the rule for using HRT. I mean, they will tell people, you know, you can be on this for about 15 years and then you're supposed to stop. So, but yet we're going to let a teenager do it.
Well, wait a minute. I didn't even ever think about this. I was just told, say you have a young lady that transitions to becoming male.
Mm-hmm.
I've met some of them. They literally, I mean, if you'd never met them before, you would think that they were male their whole life. They're shaving and everything else. What I didn't know is I was told they have to take these things for the rest of their life to continue to be like they are.
Right.
Once they've transitioned. So now you're telling me that there is a 15-year window. So what happens to these people that have transitioned over that are relying on these things? What happens to them after they can't take it anymore?
That is my question too. Magically, that quote unquote rule has now disappeared for the transgender community because any woman that comes to me on HRT or any man on HRT, they're pretty well aware. I mean, most of them, they're like, yeah, I understand. I can only take this for 15 years. But all of a sudden, that's not being discussed with the transgender community. So I don't know when all of a sudden now that's not a thing anymore, where we're not giving a warning with this. And now we're just saying it's safe to take forever. But there has been some sort of shift in that. But it's always been my understanding that you're not really supposed to exceed 15 years on HRT. And that, you know, it is a cancer driver. It can drive cancer in certain individuals. I don't know if there's a lot of data on who it does versus who it does not affect in that way. But I think that we have a lot of problems that we don't even know we're dealing with yet. What we're going to start to see it when we reach that 30, 40 year mark, I feel like.
It's unbelievable, you know, what this agenda has done. I mean, is it possible, like, if someone has been, say, 5 years taking the hormones to change their gender in their minds, mm-hmm. what happens if they just, like, during the course of 5 years, what happens if one day they just got cut off from all that? Would it be dangerous to your life or anything like that?
I don't know if it would be dangerous to your life. I think the hormones would just return to where they natively kind of wanted to be. So kind of towards the other sex, but they would be a little bit atrophied. It would be a huge mess. I'll tell you that. It would not be good.
So if it was a female that had become male and they had to stop, then they would quit growing facial hair and stuff, wouldn't they?
Yeah. And I mean, breast tissue might start to grow back. A cycle might come back. I mean, depending on what kind of surgeries have been done.
And they're not telling these people up front about the 15-year thing anymore?
To my knowledge, it's what you've said, where they say, okay, you're going to have to do this for the rest of your life. But I've always heard, and doctors are still saying, they are still telling patients to this day, when you go on to HRT, there's a 15-year limit.
And so before they quit ignoring that rule, do you know what the reasoning behind the limit is? Is it because of cancers, or why is it?
That's a really good question. If I had to kind of guess, my idea would be that I do think it skews you towards an increase in cancer risk. And then again, just overall liver toxicity. You can also kind of overflood your hormone receptor sites with too much of the synthetic stuff. And so then the endocrine system kind of just stops to work and you start to get really bad side effects.
What about with a really young child? Because they're pushing this stuff harder and harder on younger and younger children.
Yeah, really terrible and sad. If there are any mothers listening to this that have a child that is confused about their gender, I would obviously just advise that you make them wait as long as possible until they are an adult, and that you really research the side effects of these hormones long-term. And I wish I had more information for you guys on this. I can definitely do a deeper dive on this and we can come back and talk about it more for sure.
It's just, there are so many insane agendas wrapped up in our medical system anymore these days that it's almost like you can't address them in a sane manner. Mm-hmm. Because everything's gone so far into outer space. But let's keep moving here. You guys done with this one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I kind of feel like we partially addressed using homeopathy to be an alternative to hormone replacement therapy. Is there more to add there? You did mention that there's no such thing as bioidentical hormones.
Yes. That is a lovely marketing ploy. You cannot make or mimic a human hormone. It just doesn't exist. These things are all synthesized from yam and soy. I am going to later on go through some specific hormone protocols. So I'll go through menopause, PCOS protocol, low testosterone and male protocols using homeopathy when we get a little bit later down. But I kind of just wanted to go over just like side effects of HRT, talk about iodine a little bit more, and just do some other things first, if that's okay with you guys.
All right, let's do that. I take iodine almost religiously, and it's been a huge improvement. There was a time when I used to get cysts, and the iodine makes short work of those. It really did make a huge difference. I use the Lugol's iodine, but what would you like to add with regard to the element iodine?
Sure. So I have heard you guys talk about this a lot on the show, and I just kind of wanted to offer a deeper look at this because it's a lot more sinister what's going on with this beyond them removing it from table salt. I recommend everyone, if this interests you, to read the book, The Iodine Crisis, which I'll be kind of going over the iodine protocol based on that book. And that's how I've shaped my practice with dealing with thyroid issues from the iodine perspective. But we all know what iodine does. It's a halogen element. So that means it plugs into certain cell receptor sites. Think the beach ball again. But then there are the other halogen elements, which are the bromine, the chlorine, and the fluoride. And they all compete for that same receptor site, which means that iodine gets kicked out if there are too much of the other halogen elements. Now, our thyroid is supposed to be 60% iodine. 60%, that's a lot. Iodine is required for the female breast to detox, meaning if the breast can't detox, this can equal cancer. If the breast can't detox and you're estrogen dominant, that's a double whammy that can equal cancer. Iodine is also required to form a fetus and a baby's thyroid. So the mother gives it to her baby from her own supply, but the mother is often already running on fumes herself. So instead of talking about how they took it out of salt, I want to talk about how they removed it from white flour. Are you guys familiar with this at all?
Go ahead. We need to cover this.
Okay. So in 1980, up until 1980, we had iodine in the white flour supply in the US as well as salt. So they not only did they take it out, but this is the sinister piece. They replaced it with potassium bromide. So not only is the flour a GMO hybrid of three wheat strains, it's also bleached with chlorine, it's sprayed with glyphosate or Roundup. But then let's talk about what is this bromine that they added. Bromine is a toxic chemical used in pesticides, especially those kinds of pesticides they spray on golf courses. So like in Florida here, it's everywhere. It's used as a hot tub or a pool sanitizer agent. It's also the main ingredient used in fire retardant chemicals that are sprayed on mattresses, couches, carpets, curtains, rugs, furniture, patio cushions. Even the materials used in your car has a lot of potassium bromide. So if your furniture is not organic or non-toxic, your home is completely full of this toxin. So we are eating it, sleeping on it, sitting on it. And since it's sprayed in the environment, it gets back into us via the groundwater, rain, and the air. Since the 1980s, breast cancer in the US is now one of the most common known and prevalent diseases. You guys know this. We all know someone that's been touched by breast cancer. Next, thyroid dysfunction. This is, we had a huge soaring in thyroid issues in women since this time. As a society, our women are severely iodine deficient and bromine dominant because we are getting hit from every angle with this bromine stuff. And I know this because I run these tests on people every day. So when I take on a new thyroid client, I'm looking at the relationship between her iodine and her bromine levels. Out of the hundreds of women, I've only had one woman test in range for iodine, one. And she had already read the iodine crisis. What a coincidence.
She was taking it?
Yeah, she had already been taking it. And it was actually on your show, Crow, that I heard the statistic that women who breastfeed are 90% less likely to develop breast cancer. Yet we're told that estrogen is the cause for breast cancer. And like, oh, well, we can't really control what our estrogens are doing. This is a lie. If estrogen was the only problem with breast cancer, then why would it matter if you breastfed your baby or not? The reason that this impacts breast cancer is because our breast is a detoxification pathway in women. So if you can open up and relieve all the junk that builds up in our breast that can't detox because of the iodine deficiency, you have just detoxed all of those toxins, unfortunately, into your baby. But once you clean out that pathway, now you're 90% less likely to get breast cancer. Now, here's the downside of that. Babies are now born with over 350 known and tested toxins in their umbilical cord. That statistic is from about 8 years ago, so who knows how high it is now. But this includes heavy metals, fluoride, bromide, chlorine, pesticides, herbicides, microplastics, surfactants, petroleum, obviously drugs. And then the baby also got it again via the umbilical cord. So we're basically toxifying our babies in our bodies through the umbilical cord. And then again, once we breastfeed. Now, I'm not trying to say that you shouldn't breastfeed your child. I'm just trying to say that we need to make sure that we really, really detox before we get pregnant, like 2 years of detoxing. But basically what I'm saying is we have had a severe spike in breast cancer because we were purposely robbed of the iodine that was in our food supply, and it was replaced with something that would stop our body from detoxing. Kind of makes you think it was done on purpose.
Boy, can you imagine if someone actually had access to all the afterbirth placentas and umbilical cords, the data they could get on the state of the health of any given community?
Yeah.
That's facetiousness on my part, but I'm just saying.
Obviously, but it would be cool if we could actually run some real testing. Like we always hear, oh, they're running a test on blah, 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 or they're doing a study on this, or, you know, the government just gave $30 billion to cancer research. But are you guys actually looking at, are you researching the root cause of anything? No, it's always just, well, we're going to make more drugs. It would be great if we were in a situation where we could analyze tissues that are coming out of the woman, toxicity before, during, and after pregnancy. looking at all these things and really putting this data together, it would be incredible.
So this is kind of case in point. How many people have we had on that talk about everyone, damn near everyone is short on magnesium, damn near everyone is short on iodine. A bottle of iodine costs like $9, and that bottle will go for quite a distance. This is what I'm talking about when it's on you. We're talking about a medical establishment. I mean, just think of what we talked about a minute ago with hormones. The medical community is pushing this. I'm just saying, but you have in as one of your bullets here, Dr. Drake, a call to action for women to get tested, specifically to get tested for what?
Yes, I would love for women to get tested for your iodine levels and toxicity. So through drdalewellness.com, we actually offer an at-home thyroid toxicity test using urine and blood. So you will get your standard thyroid values. That's your TPO, TSH, T3, and T4. But guess what else we get? Iodine and bromine. So we can look at that relationship. It also looks at heavy metals and selenium levels. These are all the main things that affect thyroid function. Really simple. If your iodine is lower than your bromine, you are bromine dominant and iodine deficient. Bromine is so toxic though, that it really has the ability to make you very sick when it comes out. So I want to give everyone this protocol to understand how to get this to come out without making you sick. Because if you just start taking iodine pro, like you're saying, it really could make you not feel well. You can also find this protocol in the Iodine Crisis book. That's where I'm getting this from. So our tests, by the way, you just order, it's an at-home kit, you turn it in, and then you receive your results back. So you can either read them yourself or you can take them to a wellness practitioner through the drdalewellness.com website. You can find a practitioner. We have like a practitioner locator map if you want help or if you don't have someone to work with already. But the iodine bromine protocol, if you are bromine dominant, yes, we want to bring in iodine. I like to suggest taking it as a capsule just because you need such a high dose to start. You might need anywhere from 60 to 300 milligrams a day. And you can figure out what you need by either starting slowly and working your way up, or, you know, it's really good to muscle test with a practitioner if you can.
Is that by volume? So when you say that, if I had a 600 milliliter bottle, would you be just subtracting the number that you just suggested is taken daily? Is that what?
I see what happens. So I'm saying milligrams versus you're saying milliliters. So this is why it's way better to take it in a tablet, because the tablet's going to say exactly what's in it. So once you're up to, because I'm not sure how much is in a liquid iodine. So the tablets are made to have a more concentrated amount. So we make one, it's small, it's a 12 milligram capsule. It's called bioiodine and it also has the selenium in it. But once you start going up in dose, you may need something stronger. So I recommend using the brand Iodorol, and that is by Optimox, and it's an enteric coated tablet, and they make 50 to 300 milligrams of the Iodorol, and it's the Lugol's iodine solution just in a capsule. So you know exactly what you're getting, and it won't upset your stomach, and it's not going to like stain your teeth like it would if you had to take such a high volume of the liquid.
So I went and looked up one of the bottles, and what it says is iodine 3000 mcg, or they claim 2000% of your daily value. So they're saying in the liquid, you're getting 3000 mcg, and then they turn around and say that's 3 drops.
Which I believe an mcg...
I think
that would either be 30 or 300 milligrams. We have to ask Google.
30 or 300 milligrams. Is that a microgram MCG?
Yeah, MCG stands for microgram.
Can we do the conversion real quick?
Can somebody else do it, you guys? Because I'm afraid if I lose my spot on our bullet points.
No worries. So what are we doing? Are we doing micrograms to what?
Yeah. So put 3000 MCG to ? Milligrams, or to how many milligrams? Because it's a lot less than you think you're getting.
So 3000 micrograms is 3 milligrams.
Yeah. So see, you're only getting 3 milligrams. It's not enough. When I'm saying you need 60 to 300 milligrams a day. See what I'm saying?
Yeah. I take a full dropper. I take, you know, I don't even know how many drops that is.
But also, Crow, you don't have breasts. And so you don't need as much iodine as women. We need way more iodine than men. That's another thing that I want women to understand. There's a reason that so many women have thyroid problems and men don't. It's because we also need the iodine for our breast tissue and you guys don't.
Is there any danger in someone who hasn't been taking it, bellying up to the bar, taking a full, you know, squirter full? Is there any danger that you can take too much in one shot?
Yes, because here's what happens. I want you to imagine your thyroid like one of those really dry sponges that was wet at one time, but then it's like hard as a rock. Okay. So it's going to take a while to run iodine over it before the iodine starts absorbing. But once it does and that bromine starts coming out, you could have headaches, fever, severe pain in the limbs. Like if it's really bad, you might think that you need to go to the hospital. Severe fatigue and just overall not feeling well. Could that happen if you just walked up and swallowed a half a bottle of iodine? Probably not, because it's not going to absorb right away. But I guess my point is there is a safe protocol for how we want to get iodine in if you find out that you're bromine dominant. So we do want to start low, work our way up, see how you feel. Again, I would not recommend doing it with the drops. The drops can be what you would use down the line when you're down to like maintenance. But in the beginning, when we have to dose you high, you're better off taking the capsule or the tablet. You also need to take B vitamins, and you need to take a certain amount based on how much iodine you're taking. So the same company, Optimox, that makes the Iodorol, they also make something called ATP cofactor, which is really, there's no ATP in it, but it is a B vitamin blend. And you need to take one of those capsules per 50 milligrams of Iodorol that you're taking. So if you're taking, you know, 6 or 7 50 milligrams a day capsules, like divided, you need to make sure that you're taking the same amount of the ATP cofactor. You also need to salt your water with 2 teaspoons of Celtic sea salt per day. This is going to help the bromine flush out of the kidneys. So when you're doing all these other companion elements to the iodine protocol, it's just going to help make sure that, or just kind of mitigate the effects of these side effects happening. You definitely need to get magnesium in. You could use Clive's. We make one as well. That's a liquid. You need to get 500 milligrams or more per day. You also need to get a high dose of vitamin C in your body. We make a really highly absorbable, just there's no filler or no flavor. It's just a scoopable vitamin C and collagen plus silica for absorption. You would need 3 scoops of that a day, and it's liposomal. So all of these things are going to kind of help you feel less sick when the bromine's coming out. So ideally, you're going to start taking more and more iodine until you kind of feel the bromine coming out. Like you just kind of start to feel a little bit unwell. And then you're like, okay, I'm doing it right. If you get so sick to the point where you do have severe headaches, fevers, pain in the limbs, you want to stop taking the iodine on the weekends, but take everything else. And this is just going to kind of help flush that bromine out through the kidneys.
How do you feel about Oxy powder? Have you heard of it? Dr. Group, that's it. It's a magnesium.
Okay.
And when you take it, everyone always thinks that they're getting a bad case of diarrhea. The Dr. Group described it as melting stuff off your insides in there. But I have also used that. And the only reason I'm mentioning it is because through people like Fortune, you know, who took issue with doctors claiming there was an immune system, tell me, where is it? And then he would tell me the actual immune system has to do with your gut. And are you going to the bathroom? Are you flushing through? And so when I started taking the Oxy powder, you flush out. And the only reason I'm mentioning it is because the magnesium, when people start taking it, it can put you in the bathroom if you take more than you need. But correct me if I'm wrong here, doctor, you can't really OD on magnesium because it comes right back out the other end if you have more than you need.
Absolutely. Same with vitamin C. If you take too much, the dose that I'm recommending is very safe, but it is higher than the usual dose. And I think, and you've definitely mentioned this before, Crow, if you take a supplement and you have an initial clean out, that's not the end of the world. If that diarrhea though becomes chronic, like it's happening every day, that's not good because now you're flushing your microbiome and you're looking at dehydration. But I think it's okay to have like a little bit of a clean out, you know, on the onset of taking something like that. How often are you taking it?
Maybe twice a week.
Okay.
But I take a lot less. That they say take 4 capsules. I only take 1 or 2, but I take magnesium each day. So I don't really need that much more magnesium.
Yeah, I would say since you've already been doing it and you already are having that clean out response, maybe you don't need to take as much. The idea would be to get your body to the point where you're not having that kind of a response, like not tipping over the edge like that, if that makes sense. And you're right. If you are already taking vitamin C and you're already taking magnesium and then you're taking this oxy thing, you're just creating bowel tolerance. Like you've just reached bowel tolerance and your body's like, nope, that's enough.
Yeah, even just magnesium and vitamin C, it'll put you in the bathroom. From what I understand, you kind of, with the vitamin C, you get used to it a little bit so you don't end up in the bathroom so much.
So technically, how I advise people do that is go slow. So we sell a tub that we, you know, recommend you take 3 times a day. Start with 1 time a day for like 72 hours. Or maybe 5 days, then go to 2 scoops a day. Try that for 5 or 7 days. Then you can go to 3 scoops a day. If at 3 scoops you get diarrhea, you've gone too far. Try to do 2.5. You have to just kind of try and find that point where you're not creating diarrhea and you're actually, your body is absorbing it. And then over time, you might need less and less. It just depends. Like magnesium and vitamin C, I think we're constantly flushing, so we have to replenish. But you just kind of have to find that little point where your body has enough and it's not causing that flush. It can be tricky.
So this episode, for everyone listening, it's another example. We now have another source here that is providing these quality things. And it's almost guaranteed that everyone listening is going to be short on things. And how do we know this? We know this because of the food supply. We know this because of the toxins that we're exposed to. And Clive had been providing so many quality things. Well, now we have Dr. Drake, among others. I'm just saying people should take advantage of these things. The simplest things like iodine and magnesium, it's not that hard to catch up.
Yeah. And you guys, I really love Clive's line of things. And the reason I thought that I would kind of add some value is because I'm offering something kind of different than that. So the Dr. Dale line isn't what you would, you know, that we're not known for our nutrition, right? We're really known for homeopathy, thyroid, hormone things. So it's kind of like, if you could just plug us in to that part that's missing, but I still think Clive's stuff is very superior as far as nutrition stuff. We definitely have some things, like we have, some minerals. We don't really do vitamins. We're really more known for homeopathy and herbs.
You do the testing though.
I personally, in my practice, yeah, because I'm testing people constantly and that gives me new ideas for what I want to make and how to make it.
That's a big deal. I have my wife tested and we have been catching up on supplements and nutrition. I even found a place that does Gerson style juicing that will deliver in my state.
Amazing.
But when we got her tested, every heavy metal on the books, every one of them off the charts. All these things are low on, and I'm just pointing out, you do the testing, you're not guessing or trying to figure out what you're short on. If someone comes to someone like you, you're doing a test that says, hey, guess what? We cannot detect any magnesium in you or something like that.
Yes, exactly. So we have some really great direct-to-patient tests that you can do for yourself. For more advanced testing, such as what you're saying, Crow, like looking at a full panel of nutrition and things like that, someone would have to work with me individually as a practitioner, which I'm also happy to do and available. But you guys, when you start doing this, if you do find out that you are bromine dominant, and ladies, I'm sorry to tell you, if you have not been taking iodine, I can almost guarantee you are bromine dominant, and it will shock you when you see your own labs. But I just want to let people know that as you start to do this iodine, you know, bringing in the iodine and getting out the bromine, think of that sponge analogy. If you retest your body in 90 days and your iodine is way off the charts, like really high, but your bromine is still really high too, it's not absorbing and you're just peeing that iodine out. You have to keep going until that bromine gets down and that iodine starts to come into range. And that's when you know you're really absorbing it properly. But if you're the type of person where you look at a lab 90 days later that you're checking on yourself and that scares you that your iodine is so high, then you should work with a practitioner to make sure that they're monitoring you, because I don't want people to get freaked out, but I'm just telling you that's going to happen. You're not just going to magically start absorbing the iodine right away. That's another reason that we take these other companion elements. It's to help the absorption of the iodine and to get the bromine out. So it's just a little more complicated than just starting taking iodine. So I just wanted to let people know that protocol. And you can find that protocol in the iodine crisis book as well. And then again, I just recommend retesting every 30 to 90 days if you can, just to kind of see how it goes. And again, if you start to not feel well, it's unfortunate, but it's working. You can also do infrared saunas will help during that time to kind of get stuff out as well. But the detoxification pathway that the bromine is going to come out is the kidneys. So we need to get lots of water, this, you know, the salted water, and just do stick to that protocol as much as you can. I also have some great lifestyle recommendations just to make sure that we're getting the least amount of exposure as possible to the bromine, even though it's really hard. But we want to limit the consumption of white US flour. You want to look for semolina wheat or organic flour items if you're eating pasta or bread. I like a brand called wildgrain.com. So they use all like non-bleached, non-GMO, non-bromated flour, and they have all kinds of delicious treats, sourdough bread, cookies, pasta, all kinds of stuff from there. So that's what I recommend for my clients if they just completely want to get off of US flour. And I just don't eat any bread or pasta when I'm out, except for maybe on a special occasion. You want to look for non-toxic furniture, especially your couch and your mattress. If you're at a furniture store, you want to ask the salesperson, hey, do you guys spray with fire retardant chemicals? I can't tell you the amount of times that people tell me, oh, nobody's ever asked me that before. And it's just shocking to me that we don't know that these are the toxins sprayed on all the things that we use and have in our house every day. But anyways, if they say, well, yeah, we do, then say, I'm not buying here. And that, you know, that's why. But there are a lot of companies now that are advertising non-toxic, we don't spray. So it is easy to find. Obviously, these aren't going to be the cheap things coming from China. Obviously, it's not plausible that we go and throw out everything in our house and then replace it with all these expensive things. So just be gentle on yourself if you're hearing this and kind of freaking out. Just make a plan to like replace one thing at a time. Maybe you already have a brand that doesn't spray. So for example, Lazy Boy Furniture, they don't spray with fire retardant chemicals. So if you already have Lazy Boy in your house, that stuff is safe. But maybe you can just call the companies, you know, if you already have furniture from someone, you can kind of retroactively find out what's in there just to be sure. Also, you guys know that hot tubs and pools are going to displace iodine in the body, whether it's bromine or chlorine or whatever. So just be aware of that. If you're already bromine dominant, maybe don't sit in your hot tub every night in the winter like I used to do, by the way. This is obvious, and we've talked about this so much on the show, but drinking fluoridated and chlorinated water, this will displace iodine in your body. And then, of course, eating foods that are rich in iodine, like seaweed, those things are going to be helpful to just get the good stuff in. Do you guys have any questions, comments, or concerns on that one?
Well, we're going to wrap up hour one, Dr. Drake. Jason, is there anything else you want to get in?
Well, just since you mentioned it, do you quickly want to remind people just how horrendous fluoride is for you and why?
I do, Jason. Thank you. You guys, fluoride is a neurotoxin. It has no place in our water. It is a scam to say that it helps with oral health. You guys know that we have more cavities. Cavities are from sugars and other crap. The fluoride just goes down the mouth. It's a neurotoxin. It calcifies the pine. It does all kinds of stuff. It does not belong in our water. This is a major toxin, and our body has a really hard time getting it out. Please don't drink it. And just also be aware that if you're showering in it, like let's say you're using an at-sink filter, if you're still showering in fluoridated water, it's still getting into your body. So I really, really encourage people to get a whole house filtration system, if you can, with reverse osmosis before it hits the shower, and definitely before you drink it, for sure.
All right. I will be putting up a link on the sponsored page that goes to Dr. Drake's products. You get 15% off things you can find there. If you have any questions, use the contact form, shoot something off to Rose. If Rose can't answer it, it can't be answered. Dr. Drake, please tell us where we can find you and your work.
Yes, absolutely. If you're interested in hiring me as your practitioner, I am virtual, so I can see people from everywhere. And that is dmdnaturalmedicine.com. And then drdalewellness.com. Again, we have great hormone things. We have topicals. We have minerals. We have all kinds of great protocol packs, Lyme, dental infection, H. pylori, candida, all kinds of easy to use kits. We have herbal supplements for detoxification, cholesterol, heavy metal detox, all kinds of great stuff. And then we also offer the direct-to-patient home testing kits as well.
All right, there it is. We are going to wrap up hour one, take a short break, and come back for hour two. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode. Members get access to all the forums. They can create forums. They get access to all the comments section. They get access, sole access, actually, to all of the Hydrogen Alpha Solar Scope video that I am taking now. It is posted nowhere else except here for members. Members also get access to the two-hour film called Shoot the Moon, which has 10 awards out in the world now, which covers my past half a decade or more of telescope work. With that, we're going to prep up. I hope to see you logged in as a member, and I would like to wish each and every one of you a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.